Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
At Lowe's, we're about to kick off something epic for fans who want more messy. And trust us, you'll want to be a rewards member when it happens. Join for free and get access to messy exclusives, surprises, and more. Head to Lowe's.com/moremessy. Now's the time to get in because members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Little Bob here. It's America's 250th birthday, so shop the furniture America's waited 250 years for at Bob's Discount Furniture. We've got ultra-comfy power reclining sofas, stylish dining sets with convenient lift-top storage, best-selling bedrooms with over 700 five-star reviews, and a feature-packed pop-up sleeper sofa with built-in shelving, and those signature Bob-a-pedic seats. So stop into Bob's Discount Furniture or shop online at mybobs.com, where America shops for furniture.
Testing season is right around the corner, and this is when confidence really matters. When kids take time to review key concepts and strengthen their skills before assessments, it can make all the difference. IXL helps reinforce what they're learning right now, so they walk into every test feeling prepared, capable, and confident. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts. Designed for students from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL delivers personalized, interactive practice that adapts to your child's level and pace. It's an easy, effective way to support learning as the school year heads into its final stretch. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests, proven in all 50 states. IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now, and listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
KMOX is at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Now, here's your host, Mike Miller, on KMOX.
Yes, the red lights are on, so I guess I have to talk. Is that correct? Okay, so I have to talk. Megan, when you have to get up really early to get over here to do this early shift.
I do.
So then when you go home, do you take a nap?
I wish I could today, but it's not going to happen.
Uh-oh. Yeah. The kids and you.
Yeah,
and
a lot going on. And you know, the problem is then, if I wait too late to take a nap, then it's too late in the evening, and then you can't go to sleep again.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm just going to have to
tough it out.
Power through.
I
lots
think you
of
got
coffee.
The- you got the strength. See you a little later. Yes, folks, and thanks for stopping by. We'll be taking the Good Gardening Stroll shortly. And if you have any questions, concerns, or comments about your landscape, your houseplants, or whatever, you can call 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. On Saturday mornings, we get together and we discuss those type things. Everything from soil improvements to, uh-oh, what's that on my tree, to, uh-oh, why are those twigs falling off the end of the branches? Those are beetle larvae, twig pruners, diseases, and whatever. So, but remember my words, open opportunities. After that, it's going to take work, mental and physical, on your part. It's a marathon, and there truly is no sprints. So that's the fun part of it. This is your show, and I certainly appreciate you being here. And thanks to Greg, he's back again after taking a week off and having some fun up in Chicago. And he's producing. Last week, it took two people to infill for him. That shows you what a great job he actually does. And I'm Mike Miller. I've been hosting the Garden Hotline since 1994, and I've written 5 gardening books. 2 are currently available at various locations and online as well. I write articles for the Missouri Gardener magazine, and during the week I do landscape consulting, And if you'd like for me to come to your home and do a walk and talk, you can go to my website, www.mikemillerdesigns.com. On the homepage, there's an email address and phone number where I can be reached. Today, after the show, I'm headed over towards Frontenac. And a couple people have given want me to send them gift certificates for walk and talk. So I also do that. I email it to them. And today's Good Gardening Stroll is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Every morning I sort of sit there on Saturday. Let's see, where do I want to take the walk? So I decided to head north on Macklin. I went to Daggett, and there is a cobblestone-edged map of Italy. Wow, and the sign reads, Italian Gardens, maintained by the Hill 2000, and it's Barra Park Community Gardens. There's a drinking fountain there, there's a bowl for dog water, and they've left their hose out. I guess the faucet's still on, too, so maybe they have to do a little bit watering. I don't know. One thing I did have to... This is not related. Well, it is. It's part of the walk. There's a deli right across the street from Barra Park, and they had bread delivered sometime, you know, quite early. So it was sitting out on the street, so I could have gotten, you know, just picked up all the bags and put them all in the back of my car. Huge Italian loaves of bread and all other kinds of bread, too. But I just said, well, what am I going to do with all that bread? At first, I thought, what's going on there? But I had to look in the bags. I'm sorry. I didn't touch the bread, though. So you don't have to worry about that. But anyway, and this park is really kind of cool. There's a partially walled area where there's bench seating, and it's lined with knockout roses, the walkway to get up to it. And there's some cut stone plaques in memoriam. It's Club PBM of the Hill, and it lists many of the names of people who made the great sacrifice during the wars. The flagpole down the street, well... The flag was so wet it couldn't even move, even though there was a breeze. It was like it was stuck to the flagpole. But it's just, you know, it was just kind of a fun time. Massive cherry trees, flowering cherry trees, bare branches, along with so many other deciduous trees, obviously, this time of year. It wasn't, at least on that part of the Barra Park I was in, there's not too many oak trees right in there. So, like, when I'm looking out the window right here, all the oak trees are still holding under their leaves, but... Those, you know, in Barra Park, most of the trees have already dropped. So it was really kind of nice. And really, the rain had stopped, and it was really kind of nice to see the deciduous trees because the sky was starting to lighten up, and it really made everything a nice contrast looking up through the branches. So I decided to follow this asphalt walkway around, and there's a tribute to Lewis G. Midge Barra. And he had passed away in 1964, but there's a great, the whole area is just, it's really neat. And also his statue is, it's actually of his shoulders and his face and his head, blah, blah, blah. Embraced by knockout roses as well. Further down the path, there's a huge amount of juniper berries on the ground. I was surprised. So the cedars that basically run along the fence there, cedar / junipers, that kind of distinguished between the park area and the baseball field and the soccer field, they had a huge year of producing fruits / berries. And I just kept walking along, and I could tell in the summertime there's an area which is a fountain, which the kids, I'm sure, and adults really like to kind of go and cool down. The crows were overhead. They were calling out saying, the rain has stopped. Come on, let's go. Robins were all over the place suddenly, and the sky was reflected in the puddles of rainwater as I just kind of headed back towards my car. So what a great place to start my day at Barra Park in the Hill. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Mornings and afternoons, KMOX has news at the top and bottom of the hour, traffic and weather every 10 minutes, and sports at 15 and 45 on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX. This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with your host, Mike Miller, on KMOX.
Yes, folks, do you have any questions, concerns, or comments? 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. A little information-wise, Tracy was reading something off the internet the other day, and they were suggesting that people buy bare root plants this time of year and install them. And I said... That may work in certain areas, but in a location like ours where we have one day like this where it is so warm And then we could have a few days from now where it's going to be freezing cold and freeze the ground. Then it's going to get warm again. Then it's going to get cold again. And that freeze-thaw cycle, actually, bare root plants can be heaved up out of the ground and they won't survive. But they were making it sound like you could do trees, you could do shrubs, you could even do some perennials maybe. But this was, you know, I don't want to say what the, you know, this was sponsored by kind of a big name, let's say, TV show, commercial, I don't know, whatever. Doesn't matter. But this time of year, do not buy any bare root plants. It's not the best thing to do. Containerized, yes, but only containerized trees and shrubs. That's probably all that's going to be available. So anyway, enough of that stuff. Let's go to Melville and into Nancy's yard. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, Mike. I have a I have six plants outside that are in my in the ground. And I was wondering what I need to do either now or in the spring. And what they are is daylilies, bearded iris, liriope, I guess it's the corbels or the hookura,
hookura.
That. And then, what was the other thing? Oh, I have a clematis. And there was and a threadleaf coreopsis. Do I need to cut any of those down?
Probably the iris, definitely I would cut down. But the rest of it, if the foliage has turned brown, it's not really fall bloomers, any of them. So consequently, anything that blooms in the fall, you want to leave the foliage through the entire wintertime because it protects the crown. But these, if they're not bothering you where they are, and they're recent purchases, I'm assuming, they're probably, you know, free of insects, diseases, and those kind of problems. That's what happens a lot of times when, let's say, foliage on perennials is left, it can, you know, it harbors insect problems, you know, through the wintertime and everything else. So you have the option to cut it if you want to, but you don't necessarily have to.
Okay, now the bearded iris, I think I planted, I got from somebody, they were already grown, and he was, like, trying to thin out what he had.
Okay.
So he gave them to me, but I think I planted them too late, so they never did bloom. But I do have the big, tall, green, like, leaves. But they're not brown, so I don't need to do anything to those, or should I still cut those back?
I would probably cut them back. Now, if he gave you some, you know, fans, you know, of iris that really hasn't bloomed in the past, just because he divided them and gave them to you doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get flowers off them. Because if you've had them, you know, for a full season, sometimes the transition, the 1 year where something's, let's say, divided or, you know, installed into a landscape, it takes it a full year to acclimate before they're going to flower. So consequently, maybe that's the case. But if these iris, you can cut them back. If they don't bloom the next year, then I would say they're never going to bloom for you.
Okay. And the threadleaf coreopsis, you know, that's a little yellow flower
right.
And stuff. It looks like a brown bush right now. But
yes.
Do I need to cut that back at all, or does it just die off when the new comes in?
Well, yeah, it'll die off, but it's easier to get rid of. You can wait until we come transition out of wintertime if you'd like.
Okay.
And just get rid of it then. But, it's probably Coreopsis moonbeam. I'm not sure it's that particular one.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
And so, consequently, it's just through the wintertime, some of that stuff doesn't necessarily look all that good. So, a lot of times, it's just easier to cut it off from an aesthetic standpoint. The plant material doesn't really care.
Okay. So I don't need to do anything to the liriope either now or in the spring either?
Well, again, the foliage is going to be, the liriope, you know, I don't know how big the clump is, but it lays down, it really creates a mat, and it's really kind of, let's say, not all that attractive for the wintertime, but you should cut it in the spring before the new growth begins.
Okay.
And
so
again, that's an aesthetic call, because the new growth will come up through the, let's say, last year's foliage. But it's just, it doesn't really look all that nice right at first.
Okay, so basically what I have, I can just wait till spring.
Yeah, wait, but make sure you cut everything off before the new growth begins.
Right, but today I can go out and cut back my knockout rose bushes?
Yeah, oh yes, you could.
Okay. All right, I appreciate it. Thank you so much, and have a good weekend.
You do the very same thing. And now let's go to Brad, and he's from St. Louis. Hi, Brad.
Hi, Mike. I had a question about my leaves. I always use a mulching mower and thinking that I'm doing a good thing for the soil.
Mm-hmm.
But some people bag them and throw them away. What do you say?
I do both. I have a mulching mower myself. But in the lawn areas, sometimes you know, because I don't know where you live, how many leaves you have, but because we're across the street from a park, the prevailing winds blow a lot of leaves onto our lawn and our bed spaces too. And consequently, if I just kept mulching and mulching and mulching, it gets really thick and dense, you know, as far as the mulched leaves, that it becomes problematic in its own way. So what I do is about every second or third time, I just go ahead and rake. Even when you're raking, too, you're raking some of the mulched prior leaves out. But that's kind of what I do.
Okay. Is there an extra charge for another question?
Yes. Give me your credit card number here, right now.
No, I've got a pine tree, and it puts down so many pine needles. And I'm wondering if that's going to cause a change in the soil to mess up my grass. And if so, is there something to counteract that?
Basically, you can't counteract it. So in other words, where you're not going to have successful grass underneath pine trees anyway. I don't know how big this particular one is, but lawn, you know, doesn't mind a slightly acidic soil, but it's the branches, it's the root system of the tree is going to be more problematic from that perspective as opposed to the soil pH that's created by the fallen needles.
Oh, okay.
So the root system is really trouble. I mean, yes, shade is very problematic, you know, from many lawn standpoints, but the roots are really, really trouble.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Yep. And let's see. Get his credit card number, Greg, before he hangs up. Oh, he hung up. Darn it. Let's go now to Cuba, Missouri, and talk with Bob. Hi, Bob.
Good morning. How are you today?
Very good.
Well, your previous caller had my question, but when you mulch the leaves, do you have to get all of them up? I know with the rain, it's hard for the mower to pick everything up. So do I have to rake everything out?
Does it
have to be done this fall, or can it be done next spring?
Well, the problem with, let's say, letting them pile up through the wintertime is there's a couple winter funguses. And if you get leaves, you know, that are to the point where they're thick enough that you can't see your grass blades in there, then that could really create a fungus problem. The winter funguses do not kill lawns, but what they do is weaken them. And then when we come around to next year, when the summer funguses, which are deadly, start exploding, they're going after a lawn that's already weakened due to the fact that it had the winter fungus. So that's where, you know, where the real trouble comes in. So you really should kind of continue to do it on a routine basis as far as either raking, mulching, or whatever.
Okay. Yeah, we have an acre and a half and too many oak trees, so it's quite an effort to get the leaves all picked up, and with the rain, it's just stuck to the ground.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And with this amount of rain and those, you know, the oak leaves are so, a lot, depending upon what type of oaks. I mean, the white oaks have such huge leaves, they're almost like a sheet of paper. Now, the red oak, you know, group has smaller ones, but still, I mean, it becomes a lot of work for sure.
Yeah, we have 71 trees on our property. So
you're kidding. I would say don't worry about the leaves. I would say don't worry. Don't try to grow grass there. Give yourself a break.
Okay. Okay, sounds good.
Great.
You have a great day.
You do the same thing. If anybody else has questions or concerns, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Soil preparation, yes, you can go and, you know, like to St. Louis Composting and get some compost and improve your soils, your bed spaces, your garden spaces, whether it's a vegetable garden or whatever it happens to be, it doesn't matter. But don't do it when the ground is really, really wet. And that's the same thing when the ground is really wet. Let's say you bought a new tree or you got some shrubs. Planting when the ground is this wet is not all that good. And just always remember, if you're planting any woodies, to make sure that the root, you're making the hole three times the diameter of the root ball, but only about 80% as deep. I'll tell you, I go to, you know, homes so often for walk and talks, and they wonder what's wrong, you know, with these particular plants. And they've either been planted right at grade. And so consequently, there's some settling in the soil, and then there ends up a depression around the trunk of or the stems of the tree / shrub. And then consequently, water, you know, sits there. And that's what a lot of the problems are. Let's go to Oakville now and see what's going on with Dave. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Mike. I've got creeping Jenny out in the back where there's liriope and some other stuff, but the creeping Jenny got a fungus. I think I walked it in from my yard. I had kind of died out. I put a bunch of peat moss on it to try to arrest it. It did come back, but it's not fully back. I'm wondering what can I do now.
Basically, it's headed towards dormancy. So you really can't do anything at all to it. I would say hopefully, you know, if it's weaving in and of, you know, around the liriope and other things, you're just kind of stuck with what it is. But usually it's not really all that prone to fungus problems. So I'm surprised it's got a fungus problem. Now, is this the yellow one or is this just the green leafed one?
No, it's the yellow one, and I've never had it before, but I did have long lawn fungus, and I just figured I walked it in there. But I did sort of arrest it with the peat moss, but I'm wondering what to – yeah, it is going dormant. It's quite dormant, in fact. But
right.
It always comes back really nicely, and I don't care that it interweaves with the liriope. I actually like it. But I'm wondering what can I do this spring or just watch it or what?
I say just leave it alone because it – I mean, I have some of the yellow creeping Jenny or money wart, as I call it, in my landscape too. This year, this past growing season was a really difficult year for it. So I think that was just more or less universal. That's not to say yours didn't have a fungus problem, but I don't think necessarily that's what the problem actually was. Now, I've had some of mine in for like 10 years, and I have found, which I didn't realize before, that about at the 8-year mark, it starts some of the stems start losing the yellow quality, and it just reverts to the green. But, that's just kind of the way it goes in nature. But I don't, you know, I wouldn't necessarily go out and do anything in anticipation of the problem because there's really not too much you can do for, you know, big ground covers. Like, it's not really big, but I mean, let's say really matting type ground covers. So I would say just you can watch it if you want to, but I would not do anything to it.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks.
Yeah. That way you can just kind of take it easy and enjoy it. But yeah, I like it myself. I have mine combined with Sedum Golden Acre or Golden Acre Sedum Acre. So that's like people call gold moss. And I have it in a couple different places, but mainly in between the sidewalk and street. And this past year, the sedum did fine. But boy, that, the creeping Jenny or yellow money wart, as I call it, it had some tough times. Then it recovered, you know, when fall came around. But now it's, you know, like you said, headed towards dormancy. So 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Have questions, concerns, or comments? Back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, here's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, in your own yard, you could be doing a lot of stuff on a perfect day like this. Maybe putting out holiday decorations. After my walk and talk in Frontenac, I'm headed home to start laying out things, the timers, the wires, the extension cords, and all that other stuff. Don't know if I'll get around to actually getting any of the lights up. But sort of the, let's say, basic framework, is I want to get that done and because the weather's going to be nice, except they are talking about severe thunderstorms maybe later on today. So if you got stuff to do in the yard, get out there and get it done as soon as you possibly can. Let's head out to St. Charles and go into Doug's yard. Hi, Doug.
Hey, good morning. Mike, I've got a Japanese red maple that is kind of getting too large for the spot it's in.
Mm-hmm.
When is the best time to trim that back to keep it, you know, more size for my yard?
Right. Basically, all the maples, birches, and beech trees prefer to be pruned during the summertime. And you think, well, that's not the best time to do it. You can prune them in the wintertime, but there could be, you know, a little bit more sap flow than when they're pruned in the summertime. So even though we're talking basic maples, you know, as opposed to a Japanese maple, it runs pretty much through that whole genus. So I would say if you can wait until to do it in the summer, that would be ideal. If you can't, then just do it during the wintertime.
Okay, I appreciate that.
Yep. And
thank you.
Yes, and that's for anybody. Pruning this time of year, you could certainly do it on a lot of different kinds of trees and shrubs. But just remember, anything that flowers in the springtime, that if you prune it now, what you're doing is reducing the flowers for the spring. So it doesn't hurt the shrub, tree, or anything else by pruning it now, it's just simply reducing the flowers. That's why generally with spring flowering shrubs or trees, we recommend pruning just from an aesthetic standpoint after they finish flowering, because it's still early enough in the season that it shouldn't be problematic from a disease or anything else standpoint. Now let's head out to Fenton and go into Ted's yard. Hi, Ted.
Hey, Mike. Appreciate your show. We have a rock that we a pretty large rock in our bed just for decorative reasons,
mm-hmm.
but it seems like some of the plants that we plant near it. I'm just wondering if something leaches off that rock and can kill those plants that are in the area kind of next to it.
If it is limestone, definitely.
Limestone?
Yes.
So there's nothing to combat that except to remove it.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, you can go out there. What it is limestone is just like planting plant material near sidewalks or near driveways that are concrete or house foundations that are concrete cement. That could cause problems for plant material, even plant material that doesn't necessarily mine an alkaline soil. Alkaline is just sort of the quality of making in the soil a little bit more salty. It's not deadly necessarily, but it's just the chemistry of certain plants. They don't like that kind of alkalinity, and they prefer something either neutral or something more acidic. So you could use plants around it. Is it in the sun or shade?
It's half and half, depending on the time of the day.
I was going to say, there's not too many plants that like the alkaline soils that can grow in probably a part sun, part shade, because lilacs like an alkaline soil, clematis vines like an alkaline soil. So you might try one or two of those if you want to, but I don't know how big this is, but that's probably what's causing the problem for everything that you're planting around it, is the alkalinity created by the limestone.
So how would I determine if it's actually a limestone rock? Is there some type of geological process I can put some type of solution on it or something, and if it bubbles, it's a limestone or anything like that? Do you know?
No. Probably what I would do is just go and, a soil test is going to cost you about $30 or so. University of Missouri does them, and so consequently you can just go online, find out about soil tests and everything else. Just get a soil test done in the soil that's, surrounding the rock and find out what the soil pH is.
Okay.
And that would be easier, and that way, a lot of times they'll give recommendations if you want to change the pH. I mean, you can put, iron sulfate down and other things, but that's something I don't know if you really want to fool with on a, let's say, every couple year basis to make sure the soil pH is correct.
Okay. Very good information. I appreciate your program every morning. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And, thanks for having me on your show, because remember, folks, if you weren't there, I wouldn't be here. So, a couple weeks ago, I guess it was last week where I had to eat some bark because I'd made a mistake the prior week. And, that was 9 mistakes this year so far. So I hope I don't make any more mistakes. I get a little bit worn out. But take a look around your yard. Day like this, you don't want to put up holiday decorations, or you're already done with them or whatever it happens to be. But check out for the weed circumstance, because the cool season weeds, they're not flowering yet, but they're well established. And cool season weeds, those are ones that germinate. The seeds germinated in August, and they'll grow through the entire wintertime, and they'll keep growing until the weather starts getting warm. So cool season annual weeds include chickweed, annual bluegrass, shepherd's purse, rabbit's foot clover, Persian speedwell, and henbit. So again, those are ones that, they're out there. And it's just kind of amazing. You think this area is pretty much weed free. But what they do is they grow all through the cold weather, cool weather. They've been dropping. They'll start dropping seeds as they get more mature sometime around, let's say end of January, early February, they'll start flowering, and they'll drop seeds and seeds and seeds and seeds. And then those seeds will just lay there dormant until the following August. And that's the soil temperatures is right to trigger the seed germination of that particular plant. So that's what goes on at that time. And then they grow again all through the wintertime. So there's two different types of annual weeds, the cool season ones and then the warm season ones. So I'll tell you, I thought my areas were pretty much weed-free, but I have a steel-edged rock let's say gravel, not rock. But no, it's rock. 2-inch rock bed around my house. And I'm, you know, I always find henbit that's growing in there. So even though I don't know where the seed's coming from, it could come in on the, let's say, the feet of animals or myself or whatever it happens to be. So anyway, let's go now to Chuck in Westport. Hi, Chuck.
Hey, good morning, Mike. Mike, I have a confession. A couple of summers ago, I called another garden show, and they recommended a ground cover called Pachysandra, I think it is.
Right.
And because we had Creeping Jenny, and we just weren't really crazy about the Creeping Jenny. Well, we're not happy with the Pachysandra. It honestly just looks like a bunch of weeds coming up, so I want to change that out next spring.
Right.
And I didn't know if you had a recommendation. Unfortunately, my wife doesn't like English ivy, which I do. But I didn't know if you had another recommendation for a ground cover to cover maybe a 10x10 area of a landscape bed.
Is this an area that a lot of the ground covers are going to be aggressive. Now, Pachysandra, you know, in the catalogs, it looks good. It's just a lot of times it's kind of tough to get well established. Once it's established, it's, you know, okay. But I kind of agree with you on, let's say, the aesthetic qualities of the Pachysandra. Is this area in the sun or in the shade?
It's in the shade under a big sweet gum tree.
Okay, so that's a really tough spot.
Yeah, and they've got... I've got a mixture of hostas, liriope, daylilies in this area, and I'm just trying to fill in around those plantings just so I don't have as much mulch laying down around everything. So, I didn't know if there's an alternative. There's an apartment complex near me that has a ground cover that's a variegated, and it's got a leaf on it that's about the size of a nickel. It's a round-shaped leaf. And I didn't know if that's something you might know about or if you had another recommendation.
I would probably, if you want something evergreen, I would look at Vinca Minor, VincaMinor. It's an evergreen ground cover. Now, it does sprawl, so you're going to have to kind of keep it under control, you know, over time. But it'll weave in and out of other plant material. It only gets about an inch high. And in the early spring, it produces blue flowers.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, and then what you can do is because it's so flat and as we come into, you know, say, the fall season and your perennials are, all, you know, are, let's say, headed towards dormancy, you can just set your mower high and just run over the top of your perennials without impacting the Vinca Minor at all.
Oh, okay. That sounds like a good idea. So it's just called Vinca Minor.
Right. And the common name is periwinkle.
Oh, yeah. I've heard of periwinkle. Periwinkle. Okay, and I assume that's just a mid-spring planting time for something like that?
Yeah, as soon as the garden centers have it, you can put it in.
Okay.
But, you know, underneath a sweet gum tree, I don't know how far out you're planning on, you know, you want to install it, but that is a, you know, the thick, dense wood right there, right, as its trunk goes into the ground. So that could be problematic as far as getting anything well established, so just realize that that may be the circumstance.
Well, this bed is 20-some-odd feet from the trunk of the sweet gum tree.
Oh, okay.
So it's not really, I do have some English ivy around the base of the sweet gum tree.
Okay.
Which actually doesn't do that well like you're describing. But
right.
This area is pretty well away from the base of that tree. It's just, it's such a huge tree, it overhangs, it dominates the whole front yard, unfortunately. So.
That's what sweet gums do. And then, of course, then you get the sweet gum balls, which are always great fun.
Oh, yeah, that's a lot of fun every fall.
Right. So I would think a Vinca Minor would be my first choice. If you want something that has a little bit more height and a little bit bigger, then, and, you know, that has, let's say, blades that's like the more or less shaped like lawn or grass, look at the liriope.
Oh, I have that all over the place, and it's doing well in that area. I have it around another bush, but it's been there for 15 years.
Right.
While it's expanding this area, it would take forever for it to expand where I need it to. So
yeah, if there is a variety, there's one that's a clump grower, Liriope muscari, and then there is Liriope spicata, which is a spreading type. They're two different plants. So one will spread, the other one will just be a clump, and it'll just get bigger around the perimeter of the clump.
Okay. All right, great. All right, well, great. Well, thank you very much.
Yep. Good luck with that. Yeah, Vinca Minor. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with your host, Mike Miller, on KMOX.
If you have any questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. I was talking about soil testing, and I mean, seriously, we spend so much time and energy, mental money, real money, and everything else on our landscapes. And it is, I mean, it's very rewarding. It's a welcome home if you have a nice yard. And a soil test is really the key. If you don't have the soil test, you're strictly just guessing on what you need to do, because it's very difficult to know, well, I've been fertilizing, you know, routinely for a long time. Well, have you been using the same fertilizer? Yes, I've been using the same fertilizer. And guess what? Sometimes there are certain nutrients that dissipate very quickly. So in other words, either, let's say, dissolve or go up into the air like nitrogen or something like that. But like phosphorus and potassium, the last two numbers are the three major numbers. Guess what? They stay in the soil a long time. So a soil test will give you a gauge of your soil fertility. It's an inexpensive way to maintain good plant health and maximize productivity without polluting the environment by over-applications. So a lot of times we think, well, if we just do more fertilizing, then the plant material is going to do better. No, that's not necessarily the case. So, the soil fertility, it's going to fluctuate through the growing season every year. And the availability of the nutrients is going to change, too. So also, there's other things that are going to add nutrients, too, as well beyond fertilizers. There's, let's say, compost. There's mulches as they break down. There is manures, all sorts of other things, too. So just get a soil test done. It's really, really important just to find out what's going on. It's kind of like going to your doctor and, let's say, the doctor says, well, or you go in and you go, well, I'm not exactly sure what's wrong, but blah, blah, blah. He said, well, why don't we do some tests and find out what, you know, some of the circumstances actually are. And how often should you test your soil? Well, every couple years. So that's going to be, that's kind of what it's about, just every few years. Get a soil test done because there are changes in the soil. And as I said before, there are, you know, the University of Missouri does the soil testing. University of Illinois used to. I don't think they do it anymore. But there are private companies as well, private companies that are local, let's say in Belleville and other areas over on the Illinois side. But just go online, look at soil testing, and get it done. Stop fooling around. Let's go now to South City, and that's where Liz is. Hi, Liz.
Get it done. Stop fooling around.
Hey, Liz, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
Thank you. I was wondering, I had bought some dirt, not just regular dirt, like good soil,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't use it. So can I leave that set out in the package if I cover it, or should I put it in the garage over the winter?
So it's bagged, let's say bagged stuff. It's not really ideal, so you just don't want to spread it? You don't want to mix it in with your existing soil? I would say...
Well, I was going to use it in a particular spot, and I didn't get to it before... But if it's going to, if the nutrients in there are going to die or something or whatever, you know, I'll put it out. But
yeah, the nutrients are not necessarily going to die. It's just in that plastic, with the weather the way it is and everything else, you could get some real high humidity in there, and you could actually have some major fungus problems related to the inside of the bag when you finally do spread it around. So that's kind of the disadvantage of leaving something like that sit for multiple months. So if you don't want to use it, I would say take it into your garage, but don't set it on the garage floor. You know, make sure that it's up off the garage floor, either on some kind of plastic, you know, shelving or something like that. And that would be the ideal thing. Sometimes people will leave them out, and then if it's an area where the sun strikes, the bags will start splitting just due to the sun, you know, hitting the plastic, even in the wintertime. So that's, you know, problematic in its own way. So I would move it inside, you know, just make sure that it's not sitting, you know, right on the garage floor, and then use it next year.
Okay. I appreciate that. And thank you very much for your time that you spend on this show.
Well, thanks. I appreciate
thank
it.
You.
Yeah, it's, you know, a lot of times we buy things with anticipation, and, speaking of things in bags, if you have any kind of chemicals, like fertilizers or anything, liquids or granular. Just make sure those bags are pretty well, let's say, tightened up so no moisture, you know, to minimize the amount of moisture. And with your liquids, put them in a location in your garage or wherever you store your stuff that won't, where they won't freeze. Because even if you're not conscious of the fact that they froze, because in springtime when you go out there, you go, well, this, you know, you shake it in the bottle, you think, okay, well, this doesn't seem like it froze. But you never know. So you just got to be really, really careful about, you know, let's say getting stuff and then not using it through the, you know, let's say in a relative, in one season's time. So buying a big, let's say, gallon jar of something or multiple bags of something because it's cheaper at the end of the season is not necessarily the ideal thing to do, because things can change, especially if you store, let's say, your fertilizers, your insecticides, your fungicides in a shed versus like in a garage. But even like with my garage, it might as well be a shed in a way, because it's not attached to the house and it's certainly not heated. So I put them down in styrofoam, blah, blah. Anyway, so let's go now to Winfield and into John's yard. Hi, John.
Good morning.
Hi.
I have a blue spruce tree that's grown to be about 45 foot tall, within about 30 foot of the house. Can I trim the top of it, or will that kill the tree?
It won't kill the tree, but you'll probably never get any new growth there. So in other words, you'll never get any lateral growth. One that's that old and that mature, it's not going to be able to send out a new side shoot to create, let's say, a new top. So just realize that you're cutting it off, and it's going to be stuck at that height. If it was a younger tree, a lot of times when you do prune the top of it off, it'll reestablish a new, let's say, leader. But an older one like that, my guess is probably won't.
It's a beautiful tree, and I hate to cut it all the way down, but I'm kind of worried about it blowing over onto the house sometime.
Well, you know, I mean, as long as it looks healthy and everything else, that's not to say it couldn't happen, because I don't know, you know, the circumstance where you are and what kind of winds come through Winfield, where your house is. But usually, you know, spruce trees are pretty tough and durable. So that's not to say there wouldn't be something that could happen. But yeah, I mean, a lot of times people never really plan on full maturity when they install plant material, and then you get one like yours, it gets massive and it could be problematic.
Okay, thank you a lot. I've been worried about it and didn't know whether to try to trim it out or just, I hate to remove it altogether.
Right.
It's a pretty tree.
Yeah, I would say, if you're worried about it, then, you know, cutting the top off, you could try it and see what you think. But other than that, John, good luck with that and good luck with your decision. So anybody else has any questions or concerns, we've got another hour of the Garden Hotline. So I will be back after the news. So Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline.
KMOX is at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Now, here's your host, Mike Miller, on KMOX.
Yes, folks, welcome to the second hour of the Garden Hotline. I'll be giving the tip of the trowel shortly, but right now you can call 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120 with questions, comments, or concerns. Megan was too busy to talk, so she had to get out of here and back into the newsroom. And thanks for having me on your show. And you can call and ask about, how about your annuals? How are they doing? Those pansies, I have seen only a few that look good. I finally threw mine away the other day. It's like, they went through too many really cold, really warm, and they just aesthetically, the foliage was okay, but the flowering, I hadn't seen any flowers for quite a while, so I give them the toss. How about your bulbs? Those spring flowering bulbs? Oops. I forgot that those were in the garage and they never got planted. You're right on the cusp. So a warm day like this, it would be ideal to plant them, but the ground's going to be really wet. So just watch out about planting this time of year. How about your cool season vegetables, your ground covers, your house plants, your lawn, your perennials, your roses, trees, shrubs, vines, or water gardens? If you do have a water garden and you do have fish in it, or even if you don't have fish, a lot of times putting a netting over the top of the water, you know, say the pool area of your water garden, will keep a lot of the leaf debris out. For fish, if you do have fish in there, that's crucial because those leaves can sink and then really create a toxic environment for your fish. So your koi, your goldfish, and everything else, they may not do well. And then if, let's say, you don't even have fish in there, you don't want it to fill up with a lot of leaves because it's just a nightmare to clean that stuff out. And I'll share my thoughts and guess what? Remember, my answers, comments, or opinions is not the only garden path to take, but strictly offered for you to concern, to consider, not concern. It is a concern. But Greg is producing today, so when you call, he will ask you what your name is and where you're calling from. That's about all I need to know, and that's all he needs to know. So during the week, I do landscape consulting, which I do call a walk and talk. You can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com. On the homepage, there's my email address and phone number. So you can contact me, and if you'd like to give a gift certificate for a walk and talk to somebody, you can do the same thing, and I'll email a gift certificate back to you. And now, the tip of the trowel, which is a special recognition for individual group or a situation that's made an impression on me, and the tip of the trowel is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Tip of the trowel goes to Two Doors Down Charlie. Two Doors Down Charlie lives two doors down from us. And the other day, after the street sweeper, our side of the street is Thursday, and the other side of the street's Wednesday. That's how it works. But, I mean, I have to kind of give the tip of the trowel to those street sweeper people. There was so many leaves. I mean, they went up and down several times to try to get them all, but still they couldn't get them. And a lot of times some of them gets pushed back up onto the, you know, onto the bed spaces and back, you know, they don't quite get them all on the street either. But Charlie took time to take his blower out, you know, blow a lot of them back across the street into the park. And then also he got his mower out and he walked along the curb and actually chopped up a bunch of the leaves that way. So Two Doors Down Charlie, a tip of the trowel out to you. And tip of the trowel goes out to, as I see each week, different garden clubs. Gardeners of Florissant, which is a garden club. Gardeners of St. Charles County. The Garden Society of Wildwood. The Gateway Rock Garden Society. Gateway West Jesneriad Society. There's all kinds of garden clubs that go specifically at one particular type of plant material or other ones that are just kind of in general. So you can go to Missouri Botanical website and check it out. A lot of the ones that they mention or list are ones that meet there at the Botanical Garden, but you can find all kinds of gardens, you know, garden societies and garden clubs that could be really beneficial. Here's a Greater St. Louis Daffodil Society. So shows you whatever kind of plant material you may be interested in, they are going to have a plant society that could benefit you. So tip of the trowel goes out to all those people that keep organized those plant societies. They are really very beneficial to anyone, intellectually and everything else. So let's take a couple questions before we take a break. Elias lives in St. Louis. Elias, how are you today?
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Very good.
Good. What is a good mix for a raised bed?
For a raised bed?
Yes.
I would say go to St. Louis Composting and get a raised bed mix. They have it formulated for you and just mix it in with your existing soil.
Okay, it comes in bags or?
I'm not sure, you know, bag product, but just go online, you know, okay. stlcompost.com and look and make sure that it does come in bags.
Okay, second question, I have about eight amaryllis.
Amaryllis?
The pot for about 3 years. Do I have to change the potting soil?
No, you really don't. If you're fertilizing them on a routine basis, the only time you really have to, you know, change it, because you're fertilizing them usually, and a lot of times they don't even need fertilizer because they have such a huge bulb, it would help them from a beneficial standpoint. But I've grown them for multiple years, like, you know, 5 or 7 years in the same little plastic pot they came in. The only time I put them into a larger pot is when the bulb gets almost too big for the pot. And then I know there's not enough, let's say, growing medium there for it. But no, you don't really have to change a potting mix on it at all. If you want to, you can, but it's not essential to do. And if you did do that, I would probably use a type of potting mix for growing cactus because it's going to be really well drained. And the amaryllis or any type of bulb like that prefers a really well drained soil.
Okay, should I give him like a quarter of a cup of water because the dirt is, the potting soil is dry.
Yeah, I mean, if you push, if you touch it and it doesn't feel, it feels really stiff to your fingertip, yeah, certainly water it. It doesn't hurt it, but don't overwater because you don't want to rot.
Yeah, right. And my last question is, I have an orchid in a pot that it comes with wood chips.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the roots start to be on the surface.
Right.
Can I pot it in regular pot with potting soil?
No.
No?
These are ones that naturally in their native habitats grow like on the sides of trees or on trees that have fallen over or something like that. So they grow on bark. They never grow on soil or in soil.
Oh, and so on. Okay, yeah, because the leaf is getting bigger and the plant is tilted,
Right, yeah, that's what's going to happen for sure. But, the roots will come out on the surface. They'll elongate to the point where sometimes they even wrap around the edge of the pot. But no, yeah, Don't put it in potting soil or anything.
Yeah, because I took the, I give it a quarter of a cup, a week.
Right.
And I pull out, it's plastic pot. I can see the roots around the container from
right.
Inside, of course. Yeah.
And that's, as they're growing naturally, they use those roots to cling on to whatever they're growing onto. So they use those roots for support.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much, and have happy Christmas.
Well, you do the very same thing.
Yeah.
And again, just contact St. Louis Composting to find out about the raised bed mixed to see if they do have it. I don't have all their products memorized. Some are in bags, some are not. So thank you for calling, and now let's go to Dave in Manchester. Dave, how are you?
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Hi.
Hey, my concern today is regarding deers that are rubbing the bark off of trees in my yard. I've not really noticed this too much in past years, but I was wondering, I have some mature trees, and I have some that I've started out about 3 or 4 years ago that are very small. Once the bark has been rubbed off, is there anything that I should do to protect it, or should I just simply surround it with some protective material sheathing or something like that?
You could do that, but basically the best thing you can do, you're not going to be able to stop them probably. That's not to say you can't. But any of the bark that's, frayed, that's hanging on to the tree, so in other words, frayed, cut all that off with a razor blade because that just offers an opportunity to, collect moisture and other problems related to fungus. So that's what you really want to avoid. Wherever you can get to it, like using a razor blade knife or something along that line. And it's really, the males are just, they're marking their territory. It's kind of like, let's say dogs, male or cat males, they mark territories. But deer don't do, let's say, the urination. They strictly do the rubbing of the barks.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Yep. Good luck with that. And let's see, we probably should take a break. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, here's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, Elias that I was talking to before the break, he asked about if the St. Louis Composting Raised Bed Mix was available in bags. Yes, it is. It's SLC Raised Bed Mix. It's a 1 cubic foot bag. So that's pretty heavy, but they're not too bad. So you can get it in bags so you don't have to have some giant tractor trailer or whatever come with a big dump truck or anything. Let's go now to Belleville and over to Ed's yard. Hi, Ed. How are you?
Fine, Mike. Thanks. I'm a longtime listener of yours, and this is a first-time caller for me. My question is about pruning fruit trees. I have like 8 fruit trees, 4 apple and 4 peach. And now that the leaves are off my fruit trees, they really need to be pruned, I can see, because they don't have that good cup shape to them, on the limbs going up. And I got some middle limbs that need to be cut out. Is now a good time to do it, or should I wait till springtime before they bloom?
Any kind of suckering growth, so in other words, new twigs that are just kind of shooting up, definitely go ahead and do that now. Just get rid of it. But what you want, your fruit tree should be like an upside-down umbrella in a shape. But you have to realize that if you do pruning on, let's say, the branches that potentially could have, let's say, flowers slash fruit, then by pruning them now, you're just reducing your fruit count for, you know, for next spring or next summer. Right. So that's a disadvantage of doing it. But any sucker growth, anything that's like, let's say, a half inch or maybe even 3/4 of an inch in diameter, I would just cut that off and just make sure you make the cut as close as you possibly can without getting too close, which seems stupid for me to say, to the whatever it's, you know, connected to, whether it's to the trunk or the next larger branch or anything else. You want to leave just a little bit on the smaller twigs like that, maybe like an 1/8 of an inch stub. And any of the bigger branches, ultimately, if you take them off, you want to make sure that you don't flush cut because that okay. causes problems.
Okay, okay. And would it be all right to top them, too? Because a couple of my trees are so tall that, I mean, I can't even reach them with my pole catcher that catches the fruit.
Right.
You know, I can't even, so is it okay to top my trees?
Well, again, if you... Because you can't reach the fruit, I guess you could certainly do that, but I'm assuming you have a pole pruner to get up there and prune it, or are you going to, because you don't want to cut long branches off in just one cut. Longer branches, if you do that in one cut, it's going to tear the bark where they're attached to, so you don't want to have that happen. So longer branches, generally you have to cut back in sections, you know, 1/3, 1/3, with the final cut being on the trunk or the next larger branch that it's attached to.
Okay. Well, thanks for your help. I sure appreciate it, Mike. Thank you for your show.
Sure, and thanks for having me on your show. Yeah, I have a pole pruner, and speaking of pole pruners, you know, I go out there and I hack on all kinds of different things, you know, on my maple trees, mainly because that's the only really tall things. But I swear, you know, this year, the fall webworms, which are kind of like a wad of leaves on the end of the branches, you know, with all this kind of like netting, webbing and everything else, those are the fall webworms, and they feed on the trees. And for the most part, they don't do a whole lot of damage other than aesthetics. But I tell you, the, you know, a few years ago, there was only a few. This year, there's probably on at least one of them for sure. I haven't looked at all of them, but there's probably like 30 big, you know, clumps, not big, but they're probably like 4 inches long leaves that are just so bound up with this webbing from these fall webworms that, you know, they really look kind of weird. So I think I'm going to take my pole pruner out, you know, maybe not today, maybe on a day when it's cold, and, you know, get rid of some of those things. So thanks, Ed. And now let's go to Centralia, Illinois, and see what's going on with Carl. Carl, how are you?
Fine. How are you doing this morning?
Very good.
I have a, it's a rather large compost pile, and I was wondering, for the wintertime, would it be good to cover it with, like, plastic or just leave it open?
Definitely don't cover it with plastic, because that could create a fungus problem unbelievable. So just leave it alone. You know,
okay.
Generally, when the weather gets cold, it should steam. So then, you know, on a routine basis, maybe once a month or so, I don't know how big this is, or if you got a tractor or whatever, you know, rotate it and turn it. But other than that, that's about all you need to do.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep. And now let's stay in Illinois for, let's see, this third call in a row, and we're going to Fairview Heights. Joyce, how are you today?
Hi. I cannot believe I'm calling about an indoor houseplant question. Always calling out my outdoor. But I thought it was a Christmas cactus, but it's blooming now. So is it a Thanksgiving cactus?
Certainly could be, because there are two different varieties. The difference basically is the bloom cycle and also the leaves, you know, which, let's say, the chain of leaves. The Christmas cactus looks a little bit, these are not real spikes or thorns on the side. They look a little bit spikier along the perimeter edge, and the Thanksgiving cactus looks a little bit more smooth and more oval-shaped. So that's the main difference between the two from just visually looking at them. And also,
okay,
I mean, you could have a Christmas cactus that's just blooming out of cycle.
Because I don't cover it or anything.
Yeah, you don't need to do all that stuff. It's just they're going to bloom whenever they kind of want, in a way.
Yeah, that's what they're doing. And do I need to repot them? How? I mean, pots so big now, so...
Heavens no.
Can I divide them?
You could. Just make sure that you do it carefully. If you're going to divide them, you know, more or less lay the pot on its side, gently pull the Christmas cactus or Thanksgiving cactus out, and look at the root system and everything else. You're going to have to probably shake some of the potting mix off and make sure when you make a cut, so you're going to cut a wedge out of it. Or you could just cut some of the stems off if you wanted to and try to root them by laying them flat on a potting mix. And if you do this at all and you have to get some new potting mix, make sure you get potting mix for cactus, not normal potting mixes.
That's why I changed it. Okay. That's good. That's what I was doing right.
Great.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. So if yours is big and is blooming, just enjoy it. So if it doesn't bloom, let's say, technically at the right time, flowering is flowering. So that is what it's all about. Let's see if we can go to Augusta, the wine country, and see what's going on with Victor. Victor, how are you?
Good morning. First time listener, many years listening.
Ah.
But anyways, I have some information. It sounded like that I could use some of the leaves that fall on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And in the yard and whatever we have, we got a pretty good sized yard, and that leaves could go and be some type of a asset to the grass. In other words, it would be like in moldy, not moldy, but it would kind of get bad and be a asset instead of killing the grass. I don't know if it makes any sense or not.
So you're asking me if you can do that?
Yes. Can some of the leaves stay on the grass?
It depends upon how thick they are and what type they are. Okay. Some of the leaves start breaking down relatively quickly, like on locust trees and things like that, because they're relatively small.
Oak trees,
no. Because they're big, they will be there next spring, and they will create a huge humidity problem, and then you're going to have major fungus problems in your lawn.
So the best thing to do is to get rid of the leaves, is that right?
Right, either that or, like a lot of people, myself included, have a mower that mulches them. So it just keeps churning it around. It doesn't throw stuff out immediately. It spins it around and chops them up into small pieces. But even if you do that, the mulching mowers are great. But when you finish mulching, let's say, the leaves that you have, and you look back, and they're so thick you can barely see the grass,
yes,
then that's still too thick, even though the leaves have been chopped up.
So what is the best way to get rid of them? Just use a mulching mower?
You could use a mulching mower, or, you know, raking is always great fun.
Yeah, I do that now, and it's getting to be pretty much of a burden.
I understand.
Okay, well, thank you for the information I needed. There was somebody who had told me one time some of the grass that is underneath the leaves is not going to hurt anything at all.
That's wrong.
That's wrong. Okay. That's what I thought, too.
Okay. Yeah, it's just, I mean, you can go out now, and if you got, you know, any kind of leaves piled up on your lawn area, just take a rake and not rake it heavily to get rid of them. Just, you know, rake them a little bit and look how much moisture there is there. And that is just, like I said during the first hour, it's a situation where it'll create a fungus problem in the winter, which is not deadly fungus. It just weakens your lawn. And then when summer comes around, then that's when the real trouble starts. And they're already weak. So thanks, Victor. And if anybody else has any questions, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Back after these messages.
Recently on the Charlie Brennan Show,
Fabiano Carana is getting more attention than any other St. Louisan in years. What do we do with Fabiano? Aaron Williams writes in an email to me this morning. He also CC'd the mayor and Kitty Radcliffe. Any major city our size outside the United States would give this guy a huge celebration. This really is a big deal that someone living in St. Louis made to its most strenuous final world championship round in chess history. We need to find a way to make him a household name, especially among young people. That's Aaron Williams. Aaron, that's a great idea.
Charlie Brennan, weekday mornings at 9 on KMOX.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with your host, Mike Miller, on KMOX.
Yes, folks, to the phones we go, but if you do have a question, concern, or comment, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. All the Christmas tree lots, yes, they are getting all ready to go. when you do get a tree, if you decide to get a tree, when you bring it home, you know, make sure that you cut a, you know, an inch or so off the bottom of the trunk and then put it into water immediately. Let's say you can't bring it inside immediately. Still go ahead and cut it and just put it in a bucket of water, either in your garage or outside or something like that, because that's going to be to the advantage. It's going to make the needles hang on a little longer. To be honest with you, I've been surprised at how many people, when it was still November, now it's December, of course, that were, you know, had the Christmas trees already purchased. They were tied up to the top of their cars and everything else. But, you know, we all got our own schedules. So let's go to Bob now, and he's in O'Fallon. Hi, Bob.
Good morning.
Hi.
Two quick questions on a tree. I need to cut a tree back. I've done it before, and I know you tell us to trim it back and cut it back no more than one-third maximum. So my question is, you normally say to make sure the leaves are off the tree, and I've got about 10 or 15% leaves still on the tree. Can I cut that thing back yet or not?
Oh, yeah, you can do it. I mean, just it's just easier to see the branches and everything else. But if you only got that small percentage of leaves on it, they're just hanging on because they haven't let go yet, basically.
Very good. And then fertilizing the tree. I've heard your method of drilling holes and using fertilizer or compost in the holes.
Right.
How late in the winter or how early in the spring can I do that?
You can basically do it anytime you want. So
okay.
During the, you know, the dormant season. So as soon as you want to get out there and with an earth auger and an electric drill bit and just backfill those holes with compost, start about halfway out from the trunk and do a full circle around, then go move out another couple feet, then another circle around, and you do it all the way to just beyond the extension of the branches.
Wow. All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, so it's going to be a lot of, you know, let's say augering, but it's not problematic. And let's say the dirt that comes up out of the hole, you want the hole to be about 6 inches deep. And the reason for that is because all the feeder roots up near the surface. So that's why you don't need to go any deeper than that. So
yes.
It's really kind of wild and crazy. So thanks, Bob. Is there another question?
I could have asked the grass that question.
Guess not.
About where they are.
Let's go now to. Oh, I can't hear you.
No, that's all. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
Bye.
Yeah, let's go now to Mary, or you want to go to Mark? Mark in Highland. Hi, Mark.
Hello.
Hi. Go ahead.
Yeah. My question is, I've got a little outdoor water pitcher that has a virus and a long stem grass. I forget the name of it. I was wondering if, as long as I keep it covered with water on the pot, if the stems of the virus are dead, is that okay?
You mean to prune them, to cut them off?
Yeah, should I cut them off, leave them in the water, take them out?
You can leave the iris or the ornamental grass that you have growing in the water. You can leave them in, you know, the water garden just so there's water there. You can cut the foliage off whenever you want.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it looks pretty dead. So I think that was a case.
Well, some people like to leave it. You know, they don't mind the brown look through the wintertime. But I think, you know, personally, it just doesn't look all that good to me. But, again, that's a personal aesthetic call.
Okay. Well, thanks very much. That's the first time I've called you, but I've listened to you for years.
Well, great. Well, thanks for calling. Yeah, if you would go to, the Japanese garden at the botanical garden, all the iris, you know, they have the Japanese iris growing in a couple bed spaces in a couple different areas. They've all been cut back by now, and probably most of the other stuff has been cut back too, just because it's an aesthetic thing. It's not necessarily essential to do, but if you don't, then, you know, let's say during the wintertime it finally leans over, gets down into your water, and that could cause problems in and of itself. So thanks, Mark. And now let's go to Mary in Lynn, Missouri. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Mike. I have a hint to keep the deer from rubbing on your, especially the small trees. I've been hanging pie plates, like with the poke a hole through them and hang them on a branch.
Really?
And that really seems to work.
Great. Well, that's a good idea. Also, you know, I should have recommended, you know, what I've done in the past or recommended in the past that I've found pretty successful is hanging bars of Irish Spring soap.
Yes. That's good, too. That repels them.
Right.
But the pie plates are a little noisy when the wind blows sometimes, but
I haven't had any problems since I started doing that.
Wow.
You know, the aluminum pie plate.
Wowee, that's, yeah. So, I mean, you get a sort of a really wild wind chime and it keeps the deer away.
Yes. And one other thing, I have another tip of the trial to the Lynn Garden Club's 60th anniversary this year.
Perfect.
So, I just thought I'd mention that. I heard you mention all the other garden clubs.
Yeah, I just, you know, I have a big list, and I just kind of mix them up every so often. So, Lynn Garden Club. Now, where is Lynn, Missouri?
We are 20 miles east of Jeff City on Highway 50.
Oh, great.
In Osage County.
All right, sounds perfect.
Uh-huh.
Well, tip of the trowel to the Lynn Garden Club.
Yes.
Thanks, Mary.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, and thanks for the, you know, the aluminum pie pan. So, that's really... Everything is just so wild and crazy. Let's go now to St. Louis, and that's where Richard lives. Hi, Richard.
Hey, hi, Mike. How are you?
Very good.
Yeah, about a month ago, correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought you said when you cut a limb off the trunk of the tree that the spray, the black sealer, doesn't really do any good.
Not anymore. And it used to have lead in it, which helped suppress the fungus. Now it's just strictly cosmetic.
Oh, is it better not to to do it at all?
Yeah, it's better. I mean, you might as well just take some dirt or something and rub it on if you don't want to see the fresh cut. So way back when they had lead in them, it was really good. But then when they took all the lead out of all the pain stuff, that's when it turned bad. Or just not bad, just useless.
I guess it wouldn't be any good for me to melt down my sinkers at the old lead sinkers. So fishing, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you could go contrary to the Environmental Protection Agency and everything else. I'll turn you in, though. Get his address so I can turn him in.
we certainly don't want to do that. But I just have my tree. I have a tulip, and poplar tulip tree back. And it's a couple branches, lower branches, and I had it cut off at the trunk.
Right.
And I was wondering if I understood you right, and I guess I did.
Yeah, you certainly did. And again, if they're longer branches, just make sure you cut them off in sections with the final cut, you know, just leaving a relatively short stub of a, you know, half inch.
Right. Well, Mike, I thank you very much.
Well, certainly. My pleasure. Yeah, I cut, you know, some lower branches. I limbed up a cypress tree that we have, and... you can really see where the branches were, but that's just kind of the way it goes. So thanks, Richard. And now let's go to Carol in Freeburg, Illinois. Hi, Carol.
Mike, I wonder if you can tell me how to propagate rosemary.
It's a little tough, to be honest, because, you know, usually it may look like there's a whole bunch of stems, but there's not. There's usually just one stem that comes up. And taking cuttings and using rooting hormone, that would probably be a little iffy. If you wanted to try it with the rooting hormone, I would not do it this time of year. I'd do it in the spring. But things like rosemary, it's tough. I've got rosemary in the window boxes outside our kitchen. And I also have, every year I buy a rosemary tree, which we put into a window inside the house, you know, for, you know, just kind of holiday decoration. And the smell is really great. But, you know, taking cuttings or something, I think you're probably better off just to buy the plants, because even trying to grow from seed is a really, really awkward circumstance. And taking cuttings is going to be awkward as well.
Well, I've tried and have never succeeded.
Well,
so I thought I'd ask the expert.
Well, I've tried.
Thank you.
Yeah, I always fool around with all kinds of different stuff, and I never had luck with it, like I said, from seed or from taking cuttings with the rooting hormone. So I just finally decided, well, I'm just going to have to buy the plants.
That's a good idea. Thank
Well, thanks, Carol.
Bye.
Mike, see ya. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Hey guys, it's Alex Ferrario. Join me and Amy Markscores for Chili's Week in Hockey as we dive deep into the blue season every Monday night. Notes from around the league and everyone's favorite, What's Up With That? 8 to 10 Monday nights.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, here's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, St. Labore, that is where Charles lives. Charles, how are you today?
I'm pretty good. I enjoy your program. I have two questions.
Great.
I have zoysia grass in my yard, and I hate it. I'm trying to get rid of it. I sprayed it twice with Roundup this summer, trying to kill it, and now I want to replant. It got too late this fall for me, so I want to redo it next spring. Now, if I tear this all up, am I going to be spreading some of these roots that are still left, and it'll come right back, or how do I? What's the proper procedure?
Basically, you probably, even though you thought you killed it off, and with two applications and everything else, and Roundup is a systemic, so it should kill all the way down through the root system. But you're probably going to have some sprigs that have survived. So just realize that that's going to happen.
Yeah. How can I eliminate them?
You can't. I mean, you're just going to have to go after them, as it comes up and you recognize it, and then just sort of like paint directly onto it with some Roundup or something along that line. Or you can have somebody that has a sod cutter, if you know somebody like that, and they can come in and cut the sod off, the zoysia sod. But even that, you could still have some root systems that survive.
It's just very hard to get rid of.
Exactly.
Okay, the other question I have, some pecan trees. My pecans farm in the spring, and then they turn black, and some of them are all shriveled up, and some of them have black spots on them, and in the fall, there's hardly any pecans on them. They used to be tremendous bearers. And now when I crack the pecans that are under, they're black inside.
Right.
But some are whole, some are all shriveled up before you even get formed.
Yeah, I would think your trees are probably old. And they're just not, able to produce. That would be my guess. You have, I would also, you have County Extension Service. You might have them come out and take a look. But I just think, with the age, this is a fungus problem, and there's not too much you can do.
Okay. Appreciate your help.
Yep. Sorry. I wish I could be more helpful. Richard lives in the city of St. Louis. Hi, Richard.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hey, I forgot to get my canna bulbs dug up. Is it too late?
No, I mean, I don't know, what kind of protection they have, but there are some people that just put like 3 or 4 inches of mulch over the top of where they're planted and leave them out for the wintertime. But no, you can go out and dig them up now. That's not a problem.
Mine propagates so fast, I'd have like three times as many next year if I left them in the ground.
So I understand.
That's why I dig them up.
Right.
Okay. And then the second question is Nimblewill with my zoysia grass. You got any great plans for how to get rid of that stuff?
No, that's a very, very tough weed. So, I don't know of any magical incantation or anything that really is going to be all that effective.
Okay.
Sorry.
Alrighty. Thank you.
I wish I had, there's certain things, in theory it could even be listed on the herbicide label, but that is a very tough weed to control. Winfield is Tom's yard. Hi, Tom.
Hi, how are you?
Very good.
We bought a old farmhouse with about 5 acres of ground, and it has a little orchard on there with various fruit trees. We're looking at putting in a big garden this year, and we just bought the house back in January, and this spring and summer we were inundated with those Japanese beetles. I mean, it just turned the fruit trees black. I've been trying to figure out how to kill them, what to do. The only thing I've read is that you can put a milky spore bacteria in the ground. You got any other suggestions, or is that the only route to try to get at them?
Yeah, I mean, they're really, really, really tough. Now, they are grubs, so they are, as a beetle, when they're baby beetles or grubs in the ground, so you could try some grub control. So in other words, like a Grub X or something in the springtime, put it down. Really, let's say when the forsythia is in bloom, or something, it's a little bit past that probably. But that would probably be the best control you could have, because, I mean, they really did some major damage to certain trees, and some of the trees, that's, I would say, if you're going to try to get rid of them, I'd go after them as, let's say, babies, as opposed to some people pick them off the trees and put them in a bowl of soapy water and stuff. But that can be crazy, especially if you have a bunch of fruit or, any kind of trees.
Oh, we've got a dozen fruit trees.
No.
I've got wild grapevines growing up all along the fence line in the pastures.
Right.
And, man, they're just black with those things.
Right.
In the spring and late summer.
Yeah, so just try the grub control.
Grub control. All right. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, because, I mean, all beetles are going to be grubs part of their life. And there's five major, let's say, problematic grubs. Some of them don't do major things to, too much. Out of the five that are here, the Japanese beetle is, probably the most, there's one that eats bluegrass root systems too, but trouble in its own way. Paul lives in St. Charles. Hi, Paul.
How are you doing?
Good.
Quick question for you here. Norway spruce. Can I still plant Norway spruce about six foot fall and burlap? And
yeah.
Any tips you could give me on that?
Basically, you know, any of the spruce trees want to make sure that they do not sit in a wet circumstance. So in a full sun circumstance, but yeah, they can still be planted as long as you can, as long as the ground is not frozen. So just three times the diameter of the root ball. That's how, let's say, wide you want the hole, but only about 80% is deep. So in other words, the crown where the trunk and the root systems intersect is going to be higher than the surrounding ground. And again, in a full sun location is ideal. Now realize how big those things get. So don't put it too close to structures, houses, or anything like that.
Okay. And should you like mulch them or just let them go as is?
Oh, and definitely right at first, for the first couple of years, you want to mulch and probably 3 or 4 inches of mulch. And then after that, it becomes an aesthetic call as much as anything. When the trees are, you know, let's say when they're young, the branches are kind of stiff. But as they get older, then they're going to kind of sweep down. And, I mean, they're really graceful. They're great trees. And people across the street have one. And it's really nice to watch it in the wind and everything else. Now, they've limbed it up because it's gotten so big. But other than that, you can mulch if you want. You don't have to necessarily.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. And now Larry and Godfrey. Larry, how are you today?
I'm fine, thank you. Hey, I've got a couple things. I got a pruning seal, a spray-on pruning seal that really does stop the fungus. It's waterproof. It, you know, the name is Spectracide, but that was sprayed on damage by on a linden tree from winter freeze that opened the bark up, and it's, the fungus started growing on there. And I sprayed that on there, scraped the fungus off and sprayed that under, and it really does keep it from reoccurring.
Right.
And then 7 really kills Japanese beetles once they've emerged. You're never going to kill all the grubs.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, I mean, some people don't, you know, usually some people on fruit trees don't necessarily want to spray an insecticide, not that it has an impact on the tree, but yeah, that's why I just said go after them as a grub. But yeah, the 7 is pretty effective. But with any of the insecticides, you have to hit the, let's say, the beetle or whatever you're trying to kill directly with it.
Yeah, and they're always on the very top.
Yep. Exactly. They're smart.
Right. Okay.
Well, great. Well, thanks. Thanks for the insight.
You're welcome.
Yeah. And, you know, the one gentleman called about, you know, the deer problem and everything else. We talked about the lady called and said the aluminum pans hanging on your trees, especially the younger trees. And then I talked about, you know, other things like hanging bars of Irish Spring soap. And, you know, with the Irish Spring soap, there's one corner where we got all kinds of dogs in the neighborhood, and that's fine. And people walk their dogs, which I'm glad they do, because the dogs stuck in, let's say, city yards is kind of tight. But there was one spot near, let's say, a stop sign where all the dogs decided, okay, somebody down the street went to the bathroom on this, you know, stop sign post, and so I'm going to, and then it turned out to be outrageous as far as they would, you know, of course, they have to mark and scrape and everything else. But so I took some Irish Spring soap and just cut a couple bars into pieces and then laid them around the stop sign post coming up out of the ground. Now, you know, it looks good. And that's where I have some of the sedum acre, the gold moss sedum. But, I mean, the dogs were just tearing it up tremendously bad. So Irish Spring soap. And if you know Irish Spring soap, it smells so strong. I don't know how people could actually use it in their, you know, for themselves. But that's a personal choice as much as anything else. So there's all kinds of different ways and things that you can do. And it's, you know, plants that are maybe a little bit, let's say, less appealing to deer if you live in an area where deer are problematic. Anything that kind of has a fuzzy leaf, like perennials or annuals or those type things, deers generally don't like. But if the weather is horrible, they a lot of times are going after the moisture aspect. We all know they eat, you know, the hostas and everything else like that. But everybody have a great season and for fall. And happy Hanukkah tomorrow!
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
At Lowe's, we're about to kick off something epic for fans who want more messy. And trust us, you'll want to be a rewards member when it happens. Join for free and get access to messy exclusives, surprises, and more. Head to Lowe's.com/moremessy. Now's the time to get in because members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
From high school baseball to the men's NCAA College World Series to MLB and all the way to the National Baseball Hall of Fame, how will you make your mark in MLB The Show 26? Available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and Nintendo Switch. Rated E for everyone. Officially licensed by MLB Players, Inc.
Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch, did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snap's, it's refreshing!